Thanks for joining us today, Mr. Speaker. So you received the support from the majority of your colleagues in the Republican caucus last month. And I just want to jump right into what you said during your speech. You talked about how those who didn't work in the House would not get a job back in the House, in your House. And then, and I'm assuming that's Michael Lofty, Kate Cuthran, Sean Hatmaker. I mean, am I correct with that assumption?
Well, I mean, just anybody who has left, yes, they won't be coming back. And we're not going to mention names, but, you know, there may be other people who may have to move on as well.
And I wanted to ask you about that, because you said some people might be here and they might not have a job anymore. You used other words. And I'm wondering, what do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean is we're going to do a top-down approach in the General Assembly on the House side and just make sure that we have people who are wanting to work, who are here to work, and who are working. And we just want to make sure that, you know, we have a functioning House and everybody's working in harmony with one another as we move forward.
You talk about functioning and effectiveness, too. I mean, it sounds like you want the House to be effective with the employees that it has. What's your vision of a functioning House?
Well, it's one where you can have differences of opinion, and at the end of the day, you can still respect each other and still get along, and you don't let those battles destroy the friendship and the respect for one another. Everybody who is a member, they're elected by 65,000 people in their district to be here, so they deserve the respect that their voters give them to be here.
New speakers bring new ideas, and I'm wondering, what are going to be your top priorities as speaker?
Well, the first two right off the bat is to unite the House and the caucus and bring harmony and really try to put people in the positions where they can be successful. So we're looking to announce committees on the 23rd that afternoon and really putting people where their passion is and what they want to do. And if we are successful in doing that, then we'll be successful in moving forward. That's the first priority.
So potentially new committee assignments?
There could be new committee assignments. You know, there's certain people who are running for the caucus chairman position and some who are resigning that open up vacancies potentially. And so then those would have to be filled and those would have a domino effect. And then you have just some members who want to be on different committees that they have passion for that they think they might be better served on. And so we're looking at trying to make those changes as well.
Under Representative Cassada's speakership, he also started more subcommittees. And so I'm wondering, is that something you think should stay, having that subcommittee system?
Right. I think the structure of the committee system worked for us. It allowed us to have bills move a little faster, not at the speed of light, but really be heard a little quicker than not get backlogged like it was in the past. So I think the structure helped us. You know, before we start trying to look at consolidating committees or looking at that point, I think we need another year of data. And so we're going to look at the data for this year when we come back with next year and put those two together. And hopefully when we come back in 2021, then we'll have an idea of what needs to happen as far as the committees.
When you talk about data, you mean seeing if it's effective? Like,
well, I mean, you would look to see how many bills a committee has. You need to look at what looks like are busier committees. And so, you know, you don't want one subcommittee to have 100 bills and everybody else to have 20. And so, but you also don't want someone to have 5 bills in a subcommittee and everybody else has 25. That's not effective. That's not efficient. That's not a good use of the members' time. So those are the things that we'll be looking at as we get more information as we go forward.
And then you said there's some people that have resigned their chairmanships?
No, not chairmanships, members who may not be coming back or have indicated they may not be coming back. And then some who are moving around based on leadership positions and that sort of stuff.
Fair enough. I want to ask you, too, about the House. I mean, it has received some criticism, and not just the House, the legislature, in terms of the preemptions that have been passed. We talk about Community Oversight Board, that law that curtail the power of the Community Oversight Board, the living wage in Memphis. What are your thoughts on preemptions?
Well, what I will say, if you look at the state constitution, the state's the one who created the local forms of governments, and they're the ones who have oversight over those entities. And so it's our role to have, and we have the authority to have oversight over local governments, and in some cases, metro governments or county governments or city governments, and to pass policy that we think that would be harmful to this, that they're passing an ordinance or something that we view as harmful to the state of Tennessee. So the General Assembly in the past has looked at those instances and come in, and you use the word preempt or pre, and so, you know, we had those instances, but that's the role of state government. State government's role is to be the overseer of the local governments.
When we talk about the Republican Party, a lot of your colleagues believe in local government, like small government. So how do you see the role of the local government in terms of making their own decisions?
Well, I mean, I think if you're looking at when we come in and we pass something that may overturn an ordinance, I mean, if you go back and look over all the ordinances all across the state of Tennessee of local government, what is it, like 0.2% of what we're doing, right? So the vast majority, 99% and more of what local governments do, we don't get involved in if we allow them to have that capability.
So when is it that you think that the state should get involved?
Well, it's on a case-by-case basis, and we'll just kind of look at those instances when they come forward, and if we deem that it needs to be that way, we can. And sometimes, you know, sometimes there's been violations of what we thought were of the state constitution and not allowing that to happen, so we've come in and interceded in those instances as well.
With school vouchers, I believe you were against the bill. You voted against the bill in every instance that you had the opportunity to. I don't remember asking you why. Why did you vote against the bill?
You know, I had a philosophical difference on the role of how vouchers play in the school system, and so I just philosophically was against it.
What's the philosophical difference?
I just think there's a potential a better way to do it, and that's the governor's proposal, and he went through and he passed it, and that's the law that it is now. Whether or not I voted for it or against it, you know, it's the law, and we need to move forward from that.
Do you think the law should be repealed?
Well, I don't think we've ever really done that before, to my knowledge. So, you know, you'd have to take a look at it. I think the governor's doing everything within his power of the law that was passed to implement the rules and regulations for it. And I think there's opportunities out there where I've heard entities may be trying to sue the state to hold that up a little bit. So we'll just kind of have to wait and see what happens.
The governor told reporters, I believe it was last month, that he wants to start a program a year earlier. He believes that the state would have the money and the funding secured to start a program. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's the same thing I said before, which is, you know, the bill gave the governor a timeline, a certain date range. It didn't say you have to do it by this date or on this date. You just have to do it by the date. So he's living within the law that was passed, and he has the capability, if he wants to do it at the end or the middle or the beginning or wherever in between, he has that capability of proposing the rules and regulations as the law states that he can.
The governor has also talked about transparency. Representative Cassada talked about transparency while he was a speaker as well. But Cassada did a lot of behind-the-door negotiations, and I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, are you going to be doing those type of negotiations as well?
Well, I don't know what type of negotiations you're talking about. If you're talking about just having conversations with people, there's conversations that go on all the time in the General Assembly, outside the General Assembly, in the normal days and lives of everybody. So I don't know what negotiations you're talking about that were going on behind the scene.
I mean, we can think about the school voucher bill where he negotiated with Jason Zachary behind the scenes, literally behind the dais on the House floor, that he, you know, Knox County would be off the bill. And it was on the bill, and that was like a last-minute thing.
Well, in that instance, you know, if the speaker would like to have a conversation with the member one-on-one to talk about what they would like to see in the bill or not see in the bill, that's not a violation of anything, and that's fully capable. And I wasn't part of those conversations to really know if it was a negotiation or if it was just more of a, I have a question, can you tell me what the final product is?
So I'm not talking about illegalities. I'm just saying behind the scenes. So I'm wondering, when you think about transparency, what's fair?
Well, I mean, I think what transparency means is to allow people to understand what is going on, the direction that we're moving. You also have the General Assembly, who you have meetings with various people and various entities, and sometimes those are open or closed. Look at the caucus meetings, right? What we've told you, we have transparency in caucus meetings. And so if we're taking a vote or if we're talking about an issue, we understand that we have the supermajority and we have the number of votes that could pass it. So if we're talking about an issue or if we're taking a vote count on something, then we're going to be totally open and have those meetings covered. But also we have the capability of having closed doors meetings, whereas if we want to do something internally that has nothing to do with policy, nothing to do with voting on any legislation or moving Tennessee forward, it was more of an internal caucus discussion, then we have the right to close those. So I think it really depends on the situations, on how open or how closed or what part those conversations are have.
So in terms of caucus meetings, it would be depending the topic to be discussed that day.
Well, I think what we have said in the past is you can assume they're closed unless we say they're open. And I think this session, only one time for 10 minutes was a meeting closed. And that was an internal discussion about some stuff. And it wasn't anything to do really about policy or direction or voting on anything.
For those who say that big decisions are taken during those caucus meetings, what do you have to say? I mean,
you're in those caucus meetings, so I mean, you're part of it. You can report on it. So I don't know what decisions are being made outside your scope in a caucus meeting.
Well, and some of those that are closed.
Yeah, but we just told you that we don't close them to have those conversations. And you can ask any member when they come out what was discussed. And I'm sure you could, out of 73 members, you can find one or two who can tell you. And in those instances, there was nothing discussed about policy.
So no decisions are being made in those meetings?
In that 10-minute closed-door meeting? No, there was not.
Have you talked to Governor Bealey already? I mean, you're becoming speaker. I wonder if you've had already conversations with the governor in terms of his agenda and his legislative agenda for next year.
I had a few conversations with him. You know, the governor's looking at criminal justice reform and some healthcare reform. And so, you know, they're still in the process of looking at those things. So we're waiting to hear back on what those task force and stakeholder meetings come together on.
Criminal justice is big for the governor, and I believe we heard from Leader Lamberth and the governor this year that next legislative session was going to be big on that. Can you share any of those conversations in criminal justice, or is that something that it's still being?
I don't have any details yet, but, you know, they are meeting and they're looking at it, and so we're hopeful to see, and they're including members of the General Assembly in those discussions, but we don't have anything preliminary right now to discuss.
Mr. Speaker, I have to ask you about David Byrd. You told reporters that it was up to him to decide whether he should step down from his position as a representative, but you also said that you don't think he should be expelled. Why is that?
Well, I mean, when you look at it, his voters made that determination to send him back up here based on the information that they were given in the campaign, and they overwhelmingly supported to send him back. And so when you look at that, you have to balance the will of the voters and overturning the will of the voters based on having that information before them over something, over an allegation that was made from 30 years ago, right? And so that's the part that you're looking at. As far as whether or not he stays or runs again or resigns, that's up to David Byrd, his constituents, and his family on making that decision.
Is the concern also that expelling a lawmaker could set a precedent? I mean, we saw it with Jeremy Doran, but that was different because the accusation stemmed in the legislature. But with David Byrd, this was, as you said, 30 years ago, allegedly. And I'm wondering, like, is that also a concern that it would set a precedent for something that didn't even happen in the state legislature?
I mean, there is a question that needs to be answered of, does the General Assembly have the jurisdiction to expel somebody for something that happened 3 decades ago? Do we have that capability or not? That's a question that needs to be asked and determined.
How would you handle allegations of sexual misconduct made against some of your fellow lawmakers?
Well, the process is set up to go through the Subcommittee on Ethics, and that subcommittee would be in place to hear those things and make a recommendation to the body or to the speaker. And so that process would not change.
What is the line for U.S. Speaker to ask someone to step down?
Well, I mean, it's hard to answer that hypothetical question. So, you know, I think you have to look case by case and really see what that is. And to speculate at this point, it would be hard to, because you don't know every situation and you don't know every single thing out there. I will say if someone is indicted for a criminal activity, that's a felony, or if they're found guilty of a criminal activity and it's a felony, then I think there's a legitimate place right there to make sure that they resign immediately. Outside of that, it's very hard to make that determination, and it would have to be on a case-by-case basis.
I'm wondering if you think that David Byrd should address the accusations that have been made against him.
Once again, that's up to Representative Byrd and to his attorneys on what they feel like he needs to say or not say. I'm not going to interject myself and go against what legal advice that he's getting. And so that's between him and his attorney and what they want to say or not say.
You've been in the legislature for 9 years now?
9 years.
How does that feel? Does it feel like 29 years?
No, it feels like two. It goes by really fast.
Okay. Was becoming speaker something you always wanted?
I mean, never really thought about much of it as far as actually getting there. I mean, there's not a member here who doesn't think about what ifs, you know, what if I can do this? Or a lot of members have left here and gone back to be county mayors or run for mayors or run for state senate or run for Congress. And so, you know, the body here is representative of the people. And so you can't hold it against somebody. A lot of times you have people, well, you're just trying to do a stepping stone to whoever it is. And we've had a lot of members who left here and gone on to do better and bigger things. And so I commend them for doing that and look forward to working with our current members. And hopefully there'll be some of them that want to go on and do bigger and better things.
So is this something that you've thought about?
I don't think there's anybody who's here hasn't thought about running for something outside of what they're in, right? You know, whether it was maybe one day being county mayor, maybe running for Congress or running for leadership here in the House, right? Or being chairman of X committee. I mean, I think, you know, everybody's guilty of thinking, hey, I could be chairman, I could be this. I mean, regardless of what that office is, it doesn't mean that you'll ever get to achieve it. It just thinks that you're thinking about how you can help the General Assembly and how you can move it forward.
More people will hear your name more often now. What do you want people to know about this new chapter in the General Assembly with you as speaker?
Well, that's for time to tell. I can't force them, right? All I can do is do the job that I have in front of me and work with these members to bring harmony and unity. That starts with fairness and consistency and really bringing in stability. And you can't have stability if you're not consistent, and consistency leads to instability. So that's our first task, is really trying to lay the groundwork where everybody's treated the same. Everybody has the same consistency, the same standards, the same movement. Everybody knows where we want to go and what we want to do, and we keep moving forward. And we're going to agree to disagree on some issues, but we're going to agree on a lot more than we disagree, and we need to make sure that we can keep moving Tennessee forward, because Tennessee is the best state in America.
The best state in America?
Best state in America.
I'm wondering if you are going to endorse anyone for the caucus chairmanship, the position that you used to have.
No, I'm not getting involved. That's a caucus race. That is caucus leadership, and the caucus decides who they want in their leadership. It's not the speaker's leadership team. It's the caucus's leadership team. So I'll be voting, but I am not directing the caucus to go one way or another. That's a vote for the 73 people and who they think would be best to represent them.
So for whoever becomes the next chairman, what's your advice?
It's the same thing. We work well together, be consistent, be fair, and represent the entire caucus needs. We're a big caucus, and we're a diverse caucus, and I think we'll be successful. I think we have quality people running for caucus chair, all four of them, and so we'll be in good hands regardless of who wins.
Perfect. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you think it's important for people to know or to clarify?
No, I think we're good.
I was just going to clarify one thing. You know, we talked about the closed-door caucus meeting, the one that we had. If you recall, we also said that anything that's closed, we would make a media availability, and we did have a media availability to discuss what happened.
So where, what, like, when was that?
That was probably in, what, late February, early March?
It was an update. It was an update on Tennessee Ready.
Yeah, it was Department of Education. Okay. And they had requested
it
be a closed-door.
Right.
And if you look back, the Democrats do closed-door meetings, too. So, yeah, go back and look.
I mean, I'm not challenging that. I think the assumption of many people out there is that when we are not in the room, because you hold a supermajority, decisions could technically be made there. And I think that's...
But you're in those rooms. Are you not?
When we're invited, we are.
Have you ever not been invited to a caucus meeting with 73 people in it?
I think you were at every one this year, other than the speakers, but none of us were.
Sure.
None of us were.
Well, that one, an important one.
Yeah, but none of us were in that room. I mean,
right.
We weren't either.
Right.
But even that was requested.